Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Into the Darkness. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our dark show. It's also an after-midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic language, we do allow for a bit more adult content. If you find this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. For tonight's show, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry on the topic of paranoia, which was actually a topic that was recommended several months ago by another All Poetry poet, Poetress Luna, and it was one that, you know, I really liked the idea, but it just never quite felt like the right time, and then for some reason it just felt like the right time, and I have to say, I definitely have to thank her for that idea, and it turned out splendid because we had the contest completely fill up, plus it got spotlighted, so just really, really great response to the contest and to the topic of paranoia. And I'm looking forward to tonight, delving into tonight's poetry and reading and commenting. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right, what's happening?
Well, you know, I had to stop the song early. It just, I don't know why I try, you know. There's so many hard rock and heavy metal songs that I listen to all the time on my Kindle Fire, and they sound absolutely just, to me, wonderful because, you know, they're my kind of music. And I totally cling to them. I rock out to them. I sing into my broomstick handle to them. You know, it's all good. And then it gets on the Log Talk, and it sounds horribly distorted. And most of the time,
yeah,
I'm just
sure,
like, okay,
they're gone with the original.
What's that?
Should have gone with the original. That
was
a live version. That was a live version.
How could that be? I swear I don't know. I picked the one that said it was the original video for the song, so I don't know. Maybe you're right, though. But I do find, and you could be right about that. I might have accidentally given the wrong version. But I've noticed consistent, a lot of times when I pick out a heavy metal or hard rock intro song, it gets distorted. And for some reason, you know, I'll have to go back and listen and look again and see if I did accidentally put up the wrong one. But, you know, and like I said, most of the time I just go with it. But I just wasn't feeling it tonight. I thought, you know what? And go right into the show, definitely a great idea that Luna had for a dark show, and like I said, I'm thankful to her, and it's interesting too because. You know, it was funny. What happened, Rex, is I thought, okay, I'm going to run this contest, and I'm going to not promote it at all. You know, I'm not going to ask anybody for rights. I'm not going to say in any rooms, hey, looking for rights. And, you know, because I actually had a few carryovers from previous Dark Show, and I thought, you know, I'll try to get as little rights as possible in this contest. And then, like I said, somebody ended up putting it on the spotlight list. And it ended up filling up with 25 entries. And so the other the carryovers I ended up putting in are After Midnight Show and the Break On Through, just so I could, you know, make sure this whole show was dedicated to the topic of paranoia. And, let's see, what else? And how are you doing?
All right.
Awesome sauce.
Just another day.
All right. And what do you say? Are you ready to delve into some poetry?
Yep.
All right. So what do you got for us first?
Paranoid Mess by Darkened Doors. And I guess it's going to be you.
All right. Paranoid Mess by Darkened Dora. And it goes like this. There are monsters deep inside my mind, paranoia causing the gears to grind. I'm being watched from all around, what's buried beneath the ground. I see shadows moving in the night. Will spiders crawl once I turn out the light? Will I wake with one upon my arm? My brain makes up all sorts of harm. I'll never be caught on a plane. The fear will crash. I'll go insane. Not scared of lightning, it's quite a sight, but the crack of thunder gives me a fright. I loved Bozo, but now fear the creepy clown. Was it Pennywise or Gacy that brought me down? I realize the fear's all in my mind, but I can't let go. and Leave It Behind and Poem. And that was absolutely wonderfully written, great rhyme and flow. And Rex, your thoughts on the poem?
Well, I'm going to go with the A.N. This is all true of my real life. I once wrote down all the phobias I had that I could think of. The list was 2 full pages. Spiders are my biggest phobia, followed by being around people and needles. I only used a fraction of the examples here. Okay. That walks a fine line of phobias. Yes. Fear of that which is, or was, or might be. Little tiny things that crawl. Well, anyway, I lie down, but neither. I love Bozo. That nice little touch of going back in time. Bozo the Clown, the TV show from way back when. But now Fear the Creepy Clown, Pennywise or Gacy that brought me down. That's a nice touch because it does walk back in time, actually liking something only to end up being, only to end up cowering from that very same thing. I don't see what it is about clowns, but I understand that note. But there's also a couple other things in here. Never caught on a plane. The shadows. Wondering what's in the room when you turn out light. There's a whole lot of makes you wonder, how do you function with that much considerably and all the time? And what do you do to offset the pangs that come with the phobias themselves, especially if you've got a lot like this? That can't be an easy walk through a day's worth of living just to make sure you don't get bitten by one or the other of any of these.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and you're right there. It can be, oftentimes, phobias can be crippling. I too like how the comment about Bozo brought us back in time, and that, and I thought that was a really great observation. And, to me, a lot of these phobias, I think, that many of us have come about because of what do they call those urban legends, or like those little, like things that become so like repeated over and over again, like the whole idea that spiders crawl into your mouth while you're sleeping, or they crawl into your ears while you're sleeping, you know, that kind of stuff, to where, we like those scary stories, but at the same time, those scary stories, those myths, often help to escalate phobias. And I actually like that you went with the because a lot of times paranoia is connected with or is created because of having mass amount of phobias. You know, I know for me personally, I would probably say my biggest phobia is heights. My second one, which is far less likely to happen, is probably being buried alive. You know, I'm very claustrophobic. There is mention here of how it affects everyday life, but it also affects the idea of being able to go somewhere, like where she says, my brain makes up all sorts of harm. I'll never be caught on a plane. The fear will crash. I'll go insane. This whole idea of how the mind controls us so much that we can't even, set out on adventures, on traveling, my sister, who is a huge hockey fan, is terrified of mascots. She will take children and her husband, and they will go and see the Minnesota Bulldogs to play, or any local like Wisconsin or Minnesota hockey team. You know, she's right there cheering. But she will flip out if a mascot walks up to her. So I don't know. Phobia is definitely an interesting thing, that's for sure. And I thought this was a great write. And I'd like to welcome Afasiana to the show. Welcome, Afasiana. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, Pam. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Paisy.
And how are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
So far, so good. Just, you know, enjoying the poetry and getting, you know, the opportunity to hang out with you and Rex. And, you know, it's all good. And, of course, I had to have plenty of caffeine to counterset the tryptophan and everything else that I consume.
I know. I was feeling jealous of all of you today. I was like, oh, the Americans are having such yumminess today.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's so good. I did a whole big feast, and, you know, I tried something different with the turkey, and it turned out so well. Instead of leaving it unstuffed or stuffing it with stuffing, I found this recipe where you cut up pieces of a firm apple, like I used Fuji, and then red onion and celery, and you stuff that inside the turkey cavity, and then you cook it, and it flavors and moistens the meat. And, I rubbed butter on the skin to make it extra crispy and fattening.
Yum.
Yeah, it sure was good. Did you get to read Paranoid Mess Paranoid Mess by Dark Andora?
I read it. I missed the reading of it, but I read it, and it's very intense. I think there's going to be a lot of intensity tonight. There's that... the mix of phobias and how they blend together. And I can see how one, you know, would lead to the other. And that the spider one is so common, which is, it's kind of like, it must be an instinctive thing because it seems like spider tends to be the thing that freaks people out. And even like if you're high on like morphine or something like that, that is, I think, one of the most common hallucinations. The spiders in the hospital room. I think it's good to play on that. It does say that the poet's talking about their real phobias, which makes it even stronger because there's, you know, that sense of like reality that this can strike you so hard that it limits you. My favorite part was not scared of lightning. It's quite a sight, but the crack of thunder gives me a fright. Because, I mean, lightning and thunder are really like one and the same. It's connected. And to be, you know, to enjoy half of it and be afraid of the other half, I think highlights the fact that the fear is irrational. And that saying that I realize the fear is all in my head, but I can't let go and leave it behind, that's a really powerful statement because, unfortunately, with phobias and paranoia, even if you know and your logical side says, I don't need to be afraid, you can't turn that off. It's just there. You can't tell your body to stop being in that flight or fight kind of mode. So I think that was a really smart way to end it, to recognize that it's irrational, but no, you can't escape it.
I like
that.
Yeah,
because the bite in that one with the thunder and lightning is you don't have anything really to fear about the thunder, but boy, do you have something to fear about the lightning itself.
Exactly, which makes it irrational, which is why, you know, like, yeah, that's a great point there, Rex, and Afasiana. I'm glad, Afasiana, you brought up that part, and I'm glad, Rex, that you said something more, because it does point out how irrational fear can be. Because honestly, as you said, Rex, it is that lightning that we have to fear. I definitely agree with Afasiana. I read through as much as I could the poetry for tonight in the past few days, since I was lucky enough for the contest to fill up early. And I will say that going with the topic of phobia really seems to draw out not phobia, paranoia, sorry. I just thinking phobia because it's right, but really seems to draw out some intense emotional and personal rights, because I think the most people tend to go with how they relate to paranoia, which I think was awesome. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Shackled Within by Rain 874. And since you're here, Faziana, this one's for you. Please.
Shackled Within by Rain 474. Tunes in the mainspring of belief as the lifetime experiences reels in, and shackles of fear find its best hub in a soul that was as white as the snow. But the demons of depression that house in my inner self, weaving thoughts that weren't best, and I started knitting sweater with threads of distorted thoughts. Time of trauma has become past, but the wound of it is still fresh. And as if it's happening just now in front of us, making me fear of it being repeated again, even though traces of it are no more. Life has become a closed box. Yes, a closed box of beliefs. Beliefs that has impermeable walls, saying straight no to the visiting sun's rays that has power to deliver me from all these lies. Caged, caged, I am here, oh dear, caged in my own belief, caged by my own will, caged with persecution thoughts. End poem.
Great read there, Faziana. And I'm really just a strong write by Rain 474. Rex, your thoughts on this write?
All right. Offering up that thought, the last line in the first stanza, in a soul that was white as the snow. So the thought is being born with the fear itself. Until they manifested, but the demons of depression that housed in my inner self, weaving thoughts that weren't best, and I started knitting sweater with the threads of distorted thoughts. So the idea is she was born with the fears themselves, but depression helps open up the vast repertoire of that which bothers. I like the thought. Started knitting sweater with the threads of distorted thoughts. There is that notion that once you start knitting, you can't undo it because it constantly, you hear the crack of those needles one by one, adding another little notch to the thread of that which bothers, and it keeps extending itself. And the sweater offers up that sort of something warm and comforting that you can surround yourself with, but it doesn't end up being that way because it ends up as being, as you put in the last stanza, caged. Caged, I am here, oh dear. Caged in my own beliefs, caged in my own will, caged with persecution thoughts. And she hits on that sort of the darkness, but also not allowing the visiting sun's rays to actually walk in. So it's the yin and yang is out of perspective. One is overshadowing the other. So there's no reason for the balance of light to come in because the darkness is overshadowed much.
I like that. I like how you mentioned the yin and the yang are out of balance. And I'm glad you pointed out the idea of how the knitting, the idea that the clicking of the needles, I could just hear that because my mom used to knit and crochet all the time, and you can, you know, just hear that. And, you know, and that was also a really good point about how the soul was innocent until the depression overtook it. That part of there actually kind of made me think about how a lot of times depression or mental illness will strike later in life, like teens or adulthood, and you know how the building up of it can be almost overwhelming. So just some really great observations there, Rex. And Afasiana, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I like the expression of shackles of fear, because it really does shackle you. You know, your fear can hold you back from living life to the fullest, from experiencing things. I like that I guess metaphor of the shackles. I think that it works really well. I loved the part that both of you pointed out, the knitting the sweater with threads of distorted thoughts. You know, those distorted thoughts become what makes up the things that you put around you. You have this like armor that you've built out of your fear, and those thoughts have made the sweater kind of wonky, because it's not a smooth unanimous thread. It's kind of all over the place and frayed, and I'm just imagining that sweater is a mess, and that the mind is a mess after having those distorted thoughts. I loved that stanza.
Absolutely, yeah, I have to say that was a strong stanza, and I like how she ended it with the last sentence of saying caged. It had a real like intense dramatic feel to it, and I really like time of drama has become past, but the wound of it is still fresh. Sometimes those wounds, wounds that we go through, they do, there are times where they open back up, you know, and they feel like they're fresh again. So really just an excellent write and great thoughts from both of you. Oh, very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Crikey by Eric Svensson, and you got a SoundCloud.
Yes, we do. And let me find that. Here we go.
Crikey. A.D. 2021, soon to be 2022. That's if we make it through kissing beneath mistletoe. Beware the eggnog, though. Science has now proven that. Dot, dot, dot. So much paranoia around our square planet. Rubik's Cube minds befuddled, colors muddled, angst-ridden fingers fumble. Can't sort the blues from the reds. Greens keep on Pac-Man devouring the whites. Too many yellows. Crikey. Heaven almighty. Wham-bam. Thank you, maimed meme. We're stuck right back in primordial soup kitchen days. Ghouls and ghosts rattle closets. Trick-or-treat media intensifies. Beware the clones. Human in appearance, but soulless effigies of what was. You'll spot them in high places. DNA string puppets to do the deep state's bidding. Abracadabra. Fear not, little Jack Horner. You just be a good boy. Sit in your tiny corner consuming coupons. Crikey. Heaven almighty. Could as above ever be as confusing as below. Got to find something to hold on to. Write a mantra to rid all this praying mantis paranoia. identify inner devils, demons, and delusions. Got the tools, got the insight. Don't indent the quantum field with more paranoid percussion. Deepest darkness before brightest dawn. You signed on for this assignment in your pre-life soul agreement, buddy. Fear begets fear. Stacking, fracking fear. Reptilian overlords and ladies feed off human fear. More and more child trafficking exposed. Whistleblowers blue in the face. Plush purple hearts everywhere. AD 2021. Soon to be 2022. That's if we make it through kissing beneath mistletoe. Beware the eggnog, though. End poem.
Great reading right there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you can't call in, then making a recording is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Afasiana, your thoughts on Eric's poem.
Well, first of all, I love his reads. Like, at the end, even just the way he said end poem, kind of an ominous feel to it, like, goes with the paranoia. I loved that he said dot, dot, dot at the end of the first stanza. It just added so much drama to it. I liked the Rubik's Cube mind being all befuddled and you have to try to, like, get everything in order, but it's not so easy to color code your thoughts. I liked the wham bam thank you maimed meme, because that's like the song wham bam thank you ma'am. But the maimed meme really modernizes it. Trick or treat media intensifies. Because so much false information, and it's trick or treat media seems to be a pretty apt thing for life right now. I loved the Jack Horner, like the little in the corner. He uses nursery rhymes and songs and all kinds of things in creative ways to do his storytelling. I love that. And the praying mantis paranoia, I really enjoyed that too. There's so much to like in this. It was really good.
Absolutely. I have to agree. This is definitely one of those writes where I could easily, and I could see you and any one of us just going through every single stanza, picking out a part that we like. I have to agree with you. I, too, liked the Jack Horner reference. I'm glad you brought that up, and how you're right. He does cleverly use songs and nursery rhymes, and the praying mantis paranoia, that was another great part for you to bring up because, can you imagine if praying mantises were like the size of deer or bears? They're really honestly probably one of the most alert hunters in the world. I mean, like my stepsister used to have a praying mantis, and when she fed it, you could just see that going into alert. Plus, to me, it kind of speaks on the idea of how the female praying mantis, after the copulating, will bite off the head of the male. It's almost like there's this fear of having intimacy for fear that your head is going to be bitten off. I definitely have to agree with you, Fabiana. A lot of great parts in this poem and very clever lines. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, since you both hit it, I guess I got to start with the praying mantis line. That has me thinking of the cancel culture, and now they're starting to eat their own because things are not as they seem. And he hits on that with quite a bit of the trick or treat media intensifies. That's a great line. And you just be a good boy, sit in your tiny corner consuming coupons. Another shut up. We don't want to hear from you. You're not worthy of thought or voice. Go away. And that thought with science has now proven that, at least that open-ended thought of, yeah, we haven't proved a damn thing except how stupid we can be in this big paranoid square planet that he offers up. The Rubik's Cube, do you remember way back when, just after Rubik's came out, they came out with another one. And here, for all you fuzzy-minded people, we are offering you now our Pubik's Cube.
Yeah.
The angst-ridden fingers fumble. Can't sort the blues from reds. Greens keep on Pac-Man devouring whites. Too many yellows. Boy, does that pop on the thought of people are being over-medicated for no reason. The thought of you got to have this pill, this pill, this pill, this pill, this pill. And you've got all these little slots in your daily pill container. And for the most part, people are being medicated just for the sake of the money that's taken in from not just the doctors, but the big pharma. What else we got here? Soulless energy, effigies of what was. You'll spot them in high places. I like the thought with abracadabra that rolls back to Steve Miller a couple of weeks ago. He hit it right with the inner devil's demon delusion. That walked so well. And then fear begets fear, stacking, fracking fear. I like that thought because you get the nice roll with all the alliteration there, but he also pulls fracking out of, God, what the hell was that? That return to one TV show back, sci-fi TV show back in the 80s. They came out with a second version. That's the one, yes. And you know what? I like that thought. Starting out with the AD 2021 and finishing out with that, with the same thought going in, because you still got that, beware the egg dog, though. Oh, come on. There's enough crap out there, and you got to sit there and drop us with, well, now we have to be afraid of this. Well, let's see. We got 13 new varieties coming off of this one, and there's just way too much crap spilled out for the harmony of making sure everybody is fearful of everything. Christ. The only thing they're doing right now, they're going to put us back in the Stone Age.
Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I have to agree. I like that how you interpreted the Rubik's Cube, the idea of all the different pills. And I, too, really like that line about, as I mentioned, little Jack Horner sitting in the corner. And I have to agree that I like that he has, in the beginning, beware the eggnog, though, and then at the end, beware the eggnog. And as you mentioned, Rex, it really covers well the whole idea of how they bombard us with all those constant new fears that we're supposed to have, I do like how, to me anyways, where he says more and more child trafficking exposed, whistleblowers blew in the face. I do like that those lines to me speak about how oftentimes paranoia turns out to be something beneficial. It turns out that, like, if we're paranoid and feel like something is happening, and it turns out it is, that, there's that idea of how it can almost be like a strength because it exposes evils that sometimes people don't want to believe exist but do. And I like how he used crikey like three times and, to really emphasize everything that's going on. So excellent write and great comments and very well done. And, all right, where are we going to now?
Mind of Fear by Daniel Duhaime. Locked in the realm of fantasies, grasped by fear of everything, traveler in the horror of living, noose firmly put credence of a paranoid delusion, only sleep comes as a blessing to alleviate distension, thirst of the mind, container of contaminant of reality. Even love is seen as something malevolent. Possessed by fears unseen, such a life is built in misery's grasp. Pity the inflicted as they suffer in silence. And oh, I actually got a shorty.
Yeah, look at that. You notice how he assigned himself the short one there, Faziana? Mm-hmm.
It's the only male one on there.
Well, then you'll have to be reading some female ones, obviously. But great read there, Rex. And I do enjoy Daniel Duhaime's brevities that he writes. Very cool to hear. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I liked the idea of sleep being the blessing because it alleviates the horrors of life. Except that sleep tends to have nightmares if you're actually paranoid. So is it actually something that alleviates it? I have to confess, I don't know the word manivolent. So I need to look that up because I feel like it's not quite what I think it is. I like the idea of pity the inflicted because they suffer in silence. Because there is a fear of expressing your fear, I think, that is touched on here. And it's even more scary when you can't share what you're afraid of. So that's kind of how I interpreted the ending there.
I like that. I like that. I think that's a great interpretation. The whole idea that fear becomes worse when you hold it inside yourself. Well said there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, malevolent kind of hit me too, but I think it's a made-up word. I'd have to go that route. And if I was going to go what it means, I would go a melding of mental and malevolence. So the mind is malevolent to itself, which kind of fits. It's possessed by fears unseen. Such a life is built in misery's grasp, pity the inflicted because they suffer in silence. There's that note. If what I think that malevolent means, it's kind of the mind doing its own dirty work upon itself. Kind of walks right back to the top, but locked in the realm of fantasies, grasped by fear of everything.
I like that. I think that meaning works well.
Yeah. It sounds good to me. You wouldn't be the first poet.
All the time. It fits.
Yeah, it does. It's also completely possible, I mean, no offense to Daniel, that he just spelled the word wrong. It happens to the best of us. But I do definitely like the idea that it's a combination of two words. And it does, as you said, with that combination of being two words, it does work really well with the poem itself. And I like how he centers this. And, you know, there's something about the shape, and, you know, I don't know if this was on purpose or it's just turned out this way, that kind of reminds me of an anvil. For some reason, it just makes it feel like the weight of the fear, you know, is that weight of the anvil. I like news firmly put credence over paranoid delusions. Only sleep comes as a blessing to alleviate distension. Curse of the mind, as a contaminer of reality. And I like how that line, it reminds us that, you know, that we know what reality is, but oftentimes our mind, our fears, contaminate reality. So great comments and excellent write and very well done. And all right, where are we going now, Rex?
We have secondhand paranoia. Which kind of sounds secondhand. All right. All right, Daisy. What you got for secondhand paranoia?
Secondhand Paranoia by Faziana. Paranoia was passed down from my mother. The helicopter advice she gave was loving smother. Worst case scenario plan for every occasion. Practice maneuvers for kidnapping evasion. Notice the exits. Watch for slow cars. Second generation emotional scars. Incredible the hypervigilance she instilled, always picturing the many ways I could be killed. Mind molded into fearing every sound. Inherited anxiety's impact profound. End poem.
That was a wonderful read. I'm so glad you were inspired to write for this show and contest and that you called in. I have to say that I like that you went with how oftentimes our paranoia, our fears come about because of, you know, how we're raised and, you know, how we can't let go of some of these things. You know, I was in some ways fortunate because of there wasn't a lot of helicopter parenting. We were pretty much left to do our own thing, you know, which also creates its own fear, you know, in time. But, you know, for me it was, and this is going to sound really odd, but because my mother's family was Jewish, there was always talk about the Holocaust in Germany and, you know, Hitler. And so even though I didn't know anybody in my family who had directly, you know, been in, you know, in like any concentration camps, there came to me this like almost ridiculous fear that somehow Nazis were going to show up in Northwest Wisconsin and get me. And it took many years to grow out of that. And with yours, I like that you mentioned to us that, you know, it was paranoia was passed down from my mother. The helicopter advice she gave was loving smother. And oftentimes that's what happens is parents, especially mothers, I think are more prone to this, have good intentions. They want to protect their children. They want to keep them safe, you know, from all harm. But then what it ends up being is, and I like your use of the word hypervigilance, you know, she instilled, is that it goes with you into adulthood. So I think this was, what I like is that you went with a different kind of take on the prompt and showed how this anxiety, this hypervigilance, this paranoia can be passed from one generation to the next. So very well done there, Faziana.
Thank you.
And Rex, your thoughts.
Okay, I get the message now with secondhand paranoia. Yeah, there is a, when you run it this way, it becomes almost almost cult-like. That's not quite the right word for it. But that distillation of fear you start putting into a child at an early age really does manifest over the years because, as you put it, incredible the hypervigilance she instilled, always picturing many ways I would be killed, mind molded and fearing every sound, inherited anxiety's impact profound. That does, because kids soft up everything at that age. They're little sponges. And you hit on the sort of the kidnap evasion, those checks, watch slow cars. That kind of had me, there's almost a note to a serial killer that rolls into this, like, what's his name? Pickford. the pig farm killer up your way. And I like the thought with the helicopter advice you gave was loving smother. It came out of the thought to protect, but the overprotection gave you something you didn't really need as a toddler or a youngster growing up. There is a notion, hey, yeah, you be careful, you do this, you watch for this, but you put that much fear into a child's mind, and they grow up with a distorted view of everything, and that kind of bends the mind later on in life, too, because then there's the sort of, all right, I know there are things I should fear, but yet to fear everything is counterproductive to who and what we're supposed to be to begin with. I'm gathering something really profound happened to your mother at an early age.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, great observation there, Rex. And, I like how you brought up the idea of, that one line had that kind of serial killer vibe to them. And you're right that the helicopter advice was definitely a really important line. Great observation and great comment. Faziana, was there anything that you'd like to say about your poem?
I feel a bit guilty writing it because I feel like I'm snitching on my mom.
It still lingers a little.
Oh, it does, for sure. It's basically, it's true. I'm paranoid because I was taught to be. At times it has saved me. And other times it's, sabotaged me. So we pick up what we learn as well as our own messed up illnesses. So thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and I would not feel guilty about expressing. Oh, what was that, Rex? I'm sorry.
Trying to find that balance cannot be an easy thing.
No, you're right. It isn't. It is about finding balance, especially when it comes to parenting or even keeping ourselves safe. It's not easy. But the thing is, I wouldn't feel guilty of Faziana because as poets we write about every aspect of life. And I know for a fact from listening to you that you absolutely love your family. But sometimes we just need to express ourselves and pour things out.
That's true.
Yep. And all right. Well, great comments and conversation. And let's see what we got next.
Paranoia by Vicky Moore. This one's all yours.
All right.
Okay. Lengthy.
Paranoia by Vicky Moore, and it goes like this. Dark eyes peeking through the blinds, looking for something or nothing. Eliza sees no strangers around. Still unable to relax, she watches. Knowledge is power, she often says, and she needs to know the truth. Her friends tell her she's crazy, and there's no one out to get her. But sweet Eliza knows better. Late at night, she has awakened many times to a figure by the bed. She screams and he runs out, always leaving the back door open. Fear rules Eliza's life day and night. Every stranger is an enemy, and her friends are not much better. She barricades her doors, covers her windows with foil. She has to be prepared for anything. Even alien beings come to take her. Eliza becomes afraid to leave. Her food runs out, and she is hungry. She thinks about having a delivery, but the driver may be the man in her room. She considers calling a friend, but they may be the ones out to hurt her. Eliza knows they talk about her. She hears them in her head. The radio warns her of the coming fight, playing certain songs to convince her. Eliza becomes gaunt, starving to death. She thinks maybe this is what they want, to have her die slowly and alone, After a few weeks, her mother comes just to check on her, as she always does when Eliza has ignored her calls. She finds her daughter in a pool of blood, her wrists split wide open as her eyes are in death. Eliza's body is surrounded by pill bottles, so many bottles, all unopened, and psychotic medicine, antidepressants too, pills that Eliza refused to swallow. Her mother cried in guilt and pain as she contacts the police and home. Wow, that one was especially dark, very intense. And Rex, your thoughts?
That rolls in stark vividity that walks in on itself. And you don't get the full gist of what's going on until the back end, the antipsychotic medicine, the antidepressants that are left unopened. So clearly, this is someone who is already suffering from something, whether it's an imbalance chemically in the brain or they've got some truly deep-seated mental issues. And the fact that she thinks everybody's out to get her, I mean, even the delivery driver dropping off food to the best friend, playing songs on the radio, it all hits on that note of someone who is definitely, you say someone's in their cups, you say they're drunk. In this case, being in their cups would be that mental anguish to the point of the only thing that is possible to relieve the pain is that taking of the life, despite the fact there was at least one other person they could have called and maybe gotten a bit of help from, but left that one out, mother. And maybe that was the issue.
Absolutely. And you're right, this is just a really dark, visceral right. And, I like that you mentioned that, that you don't really, know at first what's going on until it gets closer to the end. And then you realize that this is somebody going through a very troubling psychosis. I do like how you mentioned that they had somebody they could reach out to. And oftentimes that's what happens with even something like depression. There are people that you can reach out to, but in that moment your mind just doesn't see it. So great comment there, Rex. Excellent observation. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I like where it says every stranger is an enemy and her friends are not much better. I think that's really an exhausting feeling when you can't trust anyone. It would wear you down so much to feel that even your friends were probably out to get you. Hearing danger and everything when she hears the radio, remember my grandmother, just to emphasize the fact that my entire family is crazy, when she had dementia when she was older, used to think that there were messages for her in the newspaper. She would highlight random letters until it became a scary message, and she'd be like, you see what they're saying to me? And I was like, oh, wow. this is how I feel when I read this poem. It's that kind of thing where it's like, if you look hard enough, there will be something scary. And then it's so sad at the end because the thing that would have helped her, she was afraid to take. Or the person who she was afraid, the person who would have helped her, she was probably afraid to call. So sometimes your fear is what puts you in danger. And it's just, it's a really sad irony. This was dark and powerful. It makes you think about fear seriously.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, this one does have that tone that makes you really think if you said about fear seriously enough. Yeah, this was a wonderful dark light, just powerful and intense. And I like that, Faziana, that you brought up that part about, not trusting strangers or friends, because it really does reflect on how the mind starts to be almost like torn apart by fear. And so just an excellent write on paranoia and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you have for us next?
Autumn, Part 4, Science by Time Teller. When the tree spat at the ground, covering earth with phlegm of ruddy browns, ambers, and reds, squirrels stole what was left of the nuts, hoarding them away from Viking invasion. The lightning last night hit an old oak. A thunderous crevasse opened up the length of its trunks, and two Herculean boughs fell to earth right on top of the squirrel's hiding place. Rain flung itself at the windows, and wind stretched the gutters, the downpipes of which whistled like rivers, and ripped the very lives of spiders and grubs from their earthly places. I snuggled up to Science lying on her side, spooned in the comfort of warmth. We lay awake listening to Autumn, paranoid of her power, knowing her hex hunts us, and how we are no bigger than a spider, no smarter than a squirrel. Gaia seeks revenge. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I always like Time Teller's writing, and I always appreciate his constantly being supportive by writing for the shows. And Afasiana, your thoughts on this poem?
This was beautiful and creative and unexpected, maybe, but in a good way. I never would have thought of, you know, the leaves falling from the trees in autumn to be like phlegm of the tree that's spitting on the ground. But it's kind of a fun way to put it. And, you know, that kind of the view of the squirrel stealing the nuts, and it kind of puts a negative twist on things that I usually think are beautiful. And yet it has this kind of beautiful ending where they're snuggled up to Science. The idea of like spooning with Science is really interesting, and having like that connection with Gaia and the idea of Autumn being personified. This is interesting and beautiful, and I really liked the way that the lightning split the tree. I could picture that. You know, I wasn't following Time Teller before, but I'm going to now because I really, truly enjoy this.
Awesome. I think that's, I highly recommend checking out his poetry. I like how you mentioned that this is, clever and it takes a different approach. Like, as you mentioned, you know, things that you usually think of as nice and sweet or, you know, beautiful, like squirrel or falling leaves, suddenly takes on a little bit of a different, darker tone. So really great observation there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Beautiful darkness. That phlegm of ruddy browns, ambers, and reds hits on that nice note of snot being driven down to earth, so to speak, and the squirrels gathering up the nuts, only to be the next stanza, two Herculean boughs fell right on top of the squirrel's hiding place. It kind of denotes that thought, well, yeah, I've lost my hoard for the winter. Then again, the next one down rolls through the thought of whistling windows, the gutters flowing heavily, and everything being washed out. The spiders are getting washed out from the spout, so to speak, and the grubs being washed from their from the earth at the bottom where rainwater is running out. So everybody is feeling the thoughts of paranoia at this moment in time. Everything and everyone, and to finish out knowing her hex hunts us, and how we are no bigger than a spider, no smarter than a squirrel. And it points to the insignificantness of humanity when it comes to earthly realms as far as weather goes.
Absolutely. That was really well said there, Rex. I did like that you brought up the spider and the spout because, you know, of course, I like that it references that Itsy Bitsy Spider song. And I thought it was really clever with the line where it says, hoarding them away from Viking invasion. And you're right there, Rex. It just really touches on, you know, how when it comes to natural disasters, like storms and hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, tsunamis, all those kind of things. We are no bigger than a spider. We are no smarter than the squirrel. We, you know, if nature wanted to destroy us, you know, she easily could. And I like how this touches on that fear of storms, that the intensity of the paranoia, but I also like how he ends the single line, Gaia seeks revenge, you know, and it almost has this feeling of guilt, like, and maybe not guilt, like, on their own, but rather guilt of what's going to happen to humanity if they keep treating the earth the way they are. So just a really excellent write and great comments. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Paranoia by Man 529. And Aphasia, this one's for you.
Paranoia by Nan 529. The room is dark, dark like my soul. Someone coughs. I turn to look at them. Quiet. Why is everything quiet? You can hear a pin drop. Turning to my left, he's there, just sitting there, not making a sound. Across from me, a woman is staring at me. Who hell is she? Glancing around this hellhole, they're all just watching me, not making a sound. I'm freaking out. My head's jumbled up. I try to speak. Nothing, nothing. I'm petrified. Suddenly, she speaks. Why me? What the hell did I do to you? I shuffle my feet, feeling uncomfortable. I answer, who are you? I don't remember her looking around. Who are these people? One has a pair of scissors embedded in her chest. Another, an axe. Another, a kitchen knife. He's sitting there laughing. He turns to me, a bullet hole right through his head. You crazy bitch. You killed everyone here. It was your fucking paranoia, always accusing me. He's in my face. He's screaming at me. You even killed me! Looking around, they have all disappeared. I'm screaming, help me! He's here! Help me! Someone rushes in, pushing a needle into me. Now everything turns black. Black like my soul. I remember now. It was all my paranoia. End poem.
Great read, Aphasiana. I tell you, your librarian talents just really shine through. You know, so very cool. Yeah, it's really great to see Nan. I know she had taken a break for a bit from writing, and so when I saw her in this contest, I was really happy. She has a real talent for storytelling. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Another one where you got to wait to find out what really is going on, because that offering up from the beginning is stark and dark, but you don't get the true depth of what it is until you get to the end, the darkness and what's going on is because of the arena she's in. But in the meantime, the first three, four stanzas all hit at that thought of what's going on as though she's the victim of she's sitting amongst a bunch of victims. Even the one that supposedly she killed. So there's that wraparound notion of someone who thinks they've done some deep, dark, and disturbing things, only to realize where she is in the moment once the needle and spread, so to speak, start to take effect, and she remembers of her paranoia and where she is, which is in a hospital.
Absolutely. And you're right, Rex. I really also like how this one was another one of those where you weren't quite sure who was the victim or what was going on until she wrapped it up at the end there. So great comment. And Afasiana, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
At first, it reminded me of this play that I went to that was Henry VIII's wives in purgatory waiting for him to die, and all of them kind of talking about the ways that they died and stuff. I was wondering if she was in some kind of, like, purgatory or hell being punished for killing these people or something, but then at the end you see, like, she's imagining them. So she's haunted in a different way, not in an actual supernatural way, but haunted by her thoughts. And maybe she did hurt them, and maybe she didn't. But she's stuck thinking about it, which in some ways is even scarier to me than the idea of being stuck in purgatory looking at it, because you just don't know. Like, it could feel like eternity just being there for a few minutes, locked up like that. I don't know. It's frightening to maybe not be able to trust what you see, and to wonder what you did and not even know if it really happened. I think that's really a scary, scary poem that's well written.
Oh, absolutely. And that sounds like a really cool play. I think that's something I would enjoy. And I like how before you got to the end, because I know for every one of us, our minds do this when we read a poem or story like this, where we don't know what's going on until the end, is we start thinking about and connecting it with what we know, like the idea of purgatory. And you're right, it is particularly scary to know that this is, you know, a story about someone who can't trust their own mind, who can't trust what's their own eyes, because there is that idea of hallucinating. So definitely a great dark right and very well done. All right. Where are we going to now, Rex?
Paranoid at Night by Sapphire Rose. And we got our SoundCloud.
Awesome sauce. And let me find that, and here we go.
Paranoid at Night by Sapphire Rose. Sometimes evil lurks in the shadows, poised to jump out from the recesses of our Tartarian delusions. Walking down desolate streets, especially after midnight, an uncertainty is felt in the air. It's as if hands of time are ticking backwards. Heart races, chest heaves with each gasping breath. Fingers grip tight, knuckles white, paranoia rises. Daunting echoes scream across a phantom sky. Looking over my shoulder, shaking my head, a knot of dread hits heavy, like a bash to the back of the head, beyond the limits of plausible comprehension. A paroxysm of panicked physical reactions, a slave to the paranoia, cloaking me, unyielding. Nerve endings break apart like a supernova, for this paranoid energy has me paralyzed with an unrelenting malevolence. Manic eyes peer into the faces of passers-by. The man in the moon follows my hesitant steps up and down cobblestone streets. I am alone, scared, and paranoid at night. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
like the Tartarian realms to open up that first stanza, but everything else walks in this quite deliberately, lurk in the shadows, jump out, walking down desolate streets, time ticking backwards, heart races, chest heaves. There's a nice suspenseful note to fear rolling through this, daunting echoes scream across phantom sky, paroxysm of panic, physical reaction, slave of paranoia, cloaking me, unyielding, manic eyes peer into the face, passes by, the man who follows my head and steps up and down cobble streets. Because of all that, I didn't really walk this as an ease of thought to what it must have been like in 1888 in Whitechapel as these girls walked the streets, knowing what who and what was out there, but not knowing who or what they were. But there was this unrelenting malevolence in the air. She hits on that really well.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah, I like that you brought up that it has that kind of feel, you know, like especially with the mention of the cobblestone, of the fear that comes when, you know, that must have been around for the working girls, the prostitutes of the 1888 when Jack the Ripper was killing, because nobody knew who he was. Anyone you met up with could have been him. And I think that actually is a good thing, great thing to bring up, because it's actually very common, I think, when any type of atrocity like that is going on, where there's multiple killings in a single area, there does become that paranoia, a community type paranoia. So great comment there, Rex. And Afasiana, your thoughts on this poem?
I agree with Rex that I really like the mention of Tartarian in the beginning. That Greek myth reference definitely gets it bonus points for me. I mean, not that I'm scoring it or anything, but I'm just like, yeah. You always get points from me if you do mythology. I found the line interesting, "For this paranoid energy has me paralyzed," because energy tends to, you know, instill movement. So for an energy to stop a movement, to paralyze you so you can't function, is just a really, I mean, it makes sense, because you definitely can have that deer in the headlights feeling. I mean, I faint when I'm anxious. It's a thing. But I like that it has that contrast between, like, how we usually see energy as something that speeds up the particles, not stops them. But when it's a paranoid energy, it does the opposite sometimes of what you want. Although the heart does race, the chest heaves, so it does speed things up, but in a way that freezes you. I'm just fascinated by the physiology of that, and I think that she's brilliant to put it the way that she does.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as the points things go, bonus points, I totally get that, because I think many of us, you know, at least I do, and I know you do too, Faziana, is we'll be reading a poem, and in our heads, even though it's not our contest or our show, we'll be like, yep, that word gets extra points. That line gets extra points. And I like how you delve, you know, and the paranoia energy and how it does, like, you're right, it does make certain things race more like the heart, but then it makes you freeze up. You know, so I think that was some really great observations that you had there about paranoia and about fear and how we just, basically almost shut down. I think earlier we had talked a little bit about the flight and or fright response, and I think that's quite common when it comes to paranoia. And I like, well, one of the things I like is that a lot of times when Sapphire Rose writes something dark, she puts it in the first person narrative. So we're brought right into either her mind or the mind of the character she's creating. And I thought this was a strong write all the way through, but I particularly like nerve ending break apart like a supernova. This paranoid energy has me paralyzed in an unrelenting malevolence. And I also like daunting echoes scream across a phantom sky, looking over my shoulder, shaking my head, a knot of dread hits heavy like a bush bashed to the back of the head. How there's this idea that it just suddenly just hits so hard, and that she talks about the heaviness of that knot. So just a really just excellent write and very well done. All right, where are we going to now, Rex?
Diary of a Landlady 2, a Paranoid English Woman. By Jabo UK. This one's yours.
All right. Diary of a Landlady 2, the Paranoid English Woman by Jabo UK. And it goes like this. A lady booked to stay with me. She was in some distress. She'd left her husband and her home. Her life was in a mess. She didn't want me in her room. She said she'd keep it clean. She'd tidy up and change the sheets. She'd have her own routine. The only time she left the house was when she smoked outside. She had her food delivered in the local store supplied. One day when she went out to smoke, I thought a peak was due, and all the mirrors, all the pics were hidden out of view. She put brown paper over them and cardboard on the floor. The curtains were drawn tightly closed. She changed all the decor. She was so strange, quite paranoid, unhinged she seemed to be. She came and whispered in my ear, "Your guests are stalking me." I made allowances for her. I knew she was upset. But time went on and she got worse, thought everything a threat. She stayed with me for 2 long months. I don't know where she went. She wouldn't tell me for safety's sake. I hope she's found content. End poem. And in her AN, Jabo says, this all happened exactly as I've described. So, you know, I thought for her to tell us this true story, it gives us a real look at paranoia. And also, I'm just really happy to see Jabo writing and to see her in this contest. You know, she's always just got really wonderful rhyme and flow. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. She has some really nice flow here. It just naturally kind of it felt almost musical as you were reading it. So she must pay careful attention to her meter, which I confess is not something that I'm good at, but I can recognize it in other people's writing. I find it interesting that she covered up the mirrors and the pictures. And I'm curious, like, what pictures, like, was it real people pictures? Was it paintings? Interesting that she would cover them up. And I guess because it's more like a hotel room than an apartment. At first I thought it was a bit odd that that the landlady would have been going in the room if she wasn't going to change her own sheets. I can't imagine my landlord coming in and changing my bed. But this interesting and cool for her to tell a true story and, you know, observe what it's like from the outside. A lot of these are being written as the paranoid person, and I enjoy that perspective, but it's also cool to see from multiple perspectives how the paranoia can appear.
Absolutely. I have to agree, and I'm glad you brought that up. It is nice to see a different perspective. Now, I do know that Jabo had, at some time in the last year or so, started making her home into a bed and breakfast. And so I think, and because she lives in England, I'm thinking, but don't quote me on this, that landlady is just a term used there for somebody who would run something like a bed and breakfast in their home. That's what I'm thinking.
It makes sense. It would be just a different version of landlady than I would have.
Right, exactly. Same here. Same here. But, yeah, great comment. And, Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, you hit it right with the landlady bit. But this kind of walks me back in time. If I didn't know better, considering what she put down in the AN, this could walk easily back to 1920, like the late 20s, when Agatha Christie did a disappearing act for a couple of weeks and then claimed amnesia. It rolls along that same tone. Mysterious woman, deeply paranoid, set to herself, and all of a sudden, then she's up and gone. Kind of hits on that same vein of thought that I think Christie was having issues back then with her husband, and the idea was that she needed to get away, and the best way to do that was to kind of hide out, because there were still little tidbits of realms back in those days where you could hide out, even though you were the most famous person in the land at that time.
Oh, absolutely. And I like that you had that thought, because, you know, as we were talking about earlier, you can't, you know, sometimes when you're reading something, you don't really know right away what's going on, and so you fill in with your own thoughts. And you're right. If it wasn't for the fact that it was mentioned that this is a true story, it does very much, you know, have an Agatha Christie feel. And, you know, I know I mentioned this already, but, yeah, definitely great meter and rhyme to this. The mirror covering, I could see as not wanting to face one's own self. Like, maybe, like, there's almost, to me, if somebody covers mirrors, there's this sense of really despising themselves or really feeling guilty if they look at themselves. But the covering of the pictures, I'm not quite sure what to make of that, but at the same time, I think what I like particularly is that J. Rowe fits so many little details in here, like the covering of the pictures, you know, that she doesn't hold anything back. Like, she's like, this is what I observed, and, you know, it's not something that necessarily we can make sense out of, but I think that's the thing with paranoia, is that, you know, it's not always something that we can make sense of. So just an excellent write and very well done. And, all right, where are we going now?
Oh, When Once Inside a Mind by Jim Bellamy. Oh, and we curled up inside an abandoned dreaming suicide, corn yellowed, ghosted by rapes and fierce forest skies, just like a pewter tree. We axed toward iron when our ebonies strike ivories from rivers and guns. Curled deep down inside a snotty knotted nightdress, I will summon a sound of sexy water to swing under drips and clasped eyes. Oh, when once inside a mind a trilled tale was told, old men stuffed snappers from huts and larders, and an iconic shirking bed of beads, bangs clamorous, catted corn dolls from fields of reeds, and when one retching for closed keys, then jeerily joking by, a night-lit killer rides from, sighted eagerly, eaten spot-lipped salt gun, where the silence of the local church gabs from Renaissance darts, then shabbiness under teas, royal fished baits, where Ponte Vecchio butters, a tawny tease to tongue. And oh, as blown apart as true witches, nail Venus's vaunt after Florence and old sons, oh, underneath a Chinese sky, the soul's savior bustles after beer and star layers, you and me. And punk.
Read, Rex. I have to say that Jim Bellamy always has some of the most intriguing and thought-provoking lines. It often reads like a flow of consciousness. And I always look forward to how people interpret his poetry. And so, Afasiano, let's start with you and your thoughts.
I kind of feel like I'm on an acid trip. I had a little bit of opium. It's fascinating, definitely intriguing, but I'm not quite sure how to interpret it, to be honest. It's like a psychedelic, and he actually says that, I see on the right-hand side of his little blurb about himself, my poetry is quietly psychedelic. I don't know how quietly, but it definitely has a psychedelic feel to it. You know, my weakness is alliteration. I enjoyed Atani T's tube tongue. this has so many fun little bits to it, but I'm a little bit lost, and I think that's okay. Sometimes I like getting lost in a poem.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. Sometimes it is a wonderful thing to get lost in a poem, and sometimes you don't have to understand completely to enjoy, to, you know, just kind of enjoy the experience of reading it and hearing it. So, yes, definitely feels a little bit like I've never had an acid or opium trip, but if I did, it would probably feel a bit like this poem. You're right there, Faziana. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
All right. I'm going to go along the lines of actually delving into Poe's mind when he's on a roll. Oh, and we curled up inside an abandoned, draining suicide. Corn yellowed, ghosted by rapes and fierce forest skies, just like a pewter tree caught iron when ebonies strike ivory from rivers and guns. There's and that note with snotty, knotted night breath kind of hits on that sort of poet self. And then again, a trill tale, old, clamorous, catted corn dolls from fields of reed. There's a nice note of walking into a mind that is darkened by that river of thought that runs rampant and is just now getting everything down to paper just to eke out all the details. And to see it's on a Ponte Vecchio Butters, male Venuses, Florence and Old Sons, Chinese, the Soul Savior, and then beer and star layers, you and me, the kind of you and me, the kind of draw on the notion of himself and his mind kind of being a separate entity in the moment. But yes, there's a pleasant, nice aroma to that, which is being broiled in the moment.
I like that. I like how you brought up, you know, the you and me being the idea of him, his mind and himself being separate entities. And you're right, there's a lot to this that really speaks on a mind that's constantly being bombarded, that's constantly perhaps bombarding with the thoughts of everything that is dark in the world. You know, dreaming suicide, rivers and guns curled down deep inside his night, not a night dress. I will summon the sound of sexy water to swing under drips and clasped eyes. I like how that one seems to touch almost on the idea of the fears that women constantly have. There was some great alliteration in here. Clamorous cattle, corn dolls. I feel like that part of this too touches on the idea, like I can't help but think of Children of the Corn and other horror movies and how we're just constantly bombarded and these fears become a part of us. So just really just a thought-provoking write and definitely some great observations that you had there, Rex, and a wonderful write by Jim Bellamy. Very well done. All right. Where are we going next?
Antiquate with Phobia. All right, Faisy, we've got another one for you, please.
Antiquate with Phobia by Reflection Shadow. I'm in a war state. Conspiracy with self. A triple-down strike on my overloaded eyes. See what hits as the pan starts to fry. my cells again will eventually, as all, die. Only to disguise and say, well, that's life, scrambles. And I used to wear it like badge of state, but now I cannot sense if it really is fake, a sense of blowing your cover. My touch is poison to my own heart. It comes at the price of the life I want. It comes with anxiety, fear, and damnation. I will always be on the last assault on my well-being. And you will search for something worthwhile to diffuse my confidence. Again, I wonder until it becomes no more clear. I am no longer normal. That is your idea of overcoming fear, is much like fighting fire with fire, defector. Run down, saying escape. This is how we begin to be the distorter. You are not real. I am more real than you could ever be. I am not the toxic pools your day presents. I am not staring at that twisted mirage of you called reality's witness. And I am not heaven, and you are not hell. It is nothing. It is the nothing spell. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. Actually, I really like his short, impactful lines. I thought this was very well done. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Anxiety. Battle with self. Opens up with that. Conspiracy with self. A triple down strike on my overloaded eyes. And I used to wear it like a badge of state, but now I cannot sense if it really is fake. Walked over to that edge of propriety where the imagination walks, but if you go too far, all of a sudden you tend to you can't tell the difference between what is real and what is that you are telling yourself in the moment. I touch his poison to my own heart, a sense of reality. And then it hits on that, like, comes at the price of the life I want, fear, anxiety, the battle of the mind itself and the want. There is the left and right brain paradox, whether you've got the clamoring on the one side of your brain with the imagination, yet you've got the strict code of understanding on the other side. Yet there's no common ground that lends them to actually give themselves an easy bed to sleep in. So one takes over the other, and despite knowing the difference, you can't fight the basic tenet that is that it is, and it offers up them. I am not in heaven. You are not hell. It is the nothing spell. That twisted realm in between, because both sides of the mind can't come to the inevitable conclusion that we either go one way or the other, or we find a little bit of common ground to ease ourselves into life itself.
Very well said there, Rex. I like how you bring up that sometimes it gets to the point where the mind can't tell the difference between reality and what it creates, and also the idea that, you know, that the two sides need to find that common ground, and often they don't, and that's, well, you know, what sends people tumbling over the edge. So excellent comment there. And Faziana, you read that wonderfully. Oh wait, no, Rex read that one. Who read that one? Dang it, I'm getting tired.
Faziana read it.
Faziana read it. Okay. Oh God, that's horrible. You just two don't even sound anything alike. Like, if I had two people who sound nothing alike, it would be you and Rex. yes, you did read that wonderfully. And your thoughts?
I liked the phrase, to diffuse my confidence. You know, when I think of diffuse, I tend to think of, like, a bomb. Like, you're taking away the danger of it. And I know that there's more use of that word, but that's kind of how I see it here. It's like the confidence is a threat. This is a person who's usually afraid of everything, and here they are potentially confident, and that needs to be taken apart by this other side of them that is the fearful side. So I don't know. I was fascinated by that line in particular. I also really liked when it's talking about the cells that will die, because all cells die, and everyone and everything dies. So that section there about the cells dying, just it makes sense for a paranoid person to focus on that. It's like my body is dying right now, and pieces of it are. So there's a grain of truth in that. And when there's a little bit of truth in something, it makes it that much scarier.
Oh, absolutely, you're right. And I think that's the thing with a lot of phobias and paranoias, is there is that little bit of truth in many of them. I'm glad you brought up that point about, like, diffusing the confidence, because that really does speak of the whole idea how somebody who has paranoia, has fears, might see confidence as something that could get them hurt. And I really did like that part where it says about, and I used to wear it like a badge of state, but now I cannot sense if it is real or fake. A sense of blowing your cover, my touch to poison my own heart. There's this idea to me of somebody questioning, you know, am I a danger to other people? Am I a danger to myself? As I said, just really nice, short, impactful lines and an excellent write. Very well done. All right, Rex, where are we going now?
Paranoia, Late Night Poets by Samantha Duffy. Yours, R.
All right. Paranoia by Samantha Duffy, and it goes like this. These thoughts that creep into my head send a rush while I'm in bed. Who's there? Why me? Just leave me be. They want me dead, thrown out to sea. They know my secrets, the good and bad. I'll be exposed. It'll make me sad. I find some clues around my room, preparing now for all the doom. I see some shadows under the door. I hear each creak from the floor. Strain my ears to hear each sound. I know someone's lurking around. I turn out the light, crouch and hide. My nerve endings now are fried. Heart pulsing fast, my breath is still. I remember now, I missed my pill. End poem. There's another one with like really great rhyme to it. And excellent storytelling. And Rex, your thoughts.
I got, again, another one that left to the very last line to offer up the solution to the puzzle of what is actually going on. And again, if you understand that last line, you understand what's going on, but you don't understand that until you get to that last line. So the thought is the paranoia is real in the moment of fear towards something, but you don't know what. You know, I see some shadows under the door. I hear each creak from the floor. Straining my ears to hear each sound. I know someone's lurking around. You get the sort of naturalness for the first three stanzas. And it's natural, normal fear. And even through to the last stanza for the first three lines, and all of a sudden she drops that little bomb. I remember now, I missed my pill. There is that sort of the ease and thriller in the moment, that deep, dark fear of something, someone, or a bunch of someone that are out to get you.
Absolutely. And you're right that it does have that one word. A lot of times, you know, fears and paranoias that are, you know, these rites, they do come across as natural and normal, at least they present the idea of us questioning, you know, which I think is a really cool thing. And then that last line really hits you. And I like that people have been going that way, because actually it fits with a couple of our prompts. We had a couple of quotes in the contest. One was, I know I'm paranoid, but am I paranoid enough? And that was by Tom Clancy. And the other one was, a paranoid is someone who knows a little of what's going on, by William S. Burroughs. And, you know, that's where things like whistleblowing and, you know, people speaking up, they know other people aren't going to believe them, come in. And I think, you know, having those rights that have us, you know, not exactly know what's going on until the end line kind of fits really well with the whole idea of, you know, when paranoia is necessary and when it becomes crippling. So just a really great comment there, Rex. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really liked how this began with the thoughts creeping into the head while in bed, because that is a spot where, you know, anxiety tends to hit you, especially if you're, like, I don't know, trying to fall asleep, and that's when your mind goes to all the crazy places. It talks about, like, the kind of the psychological fear for a while, and then it talks about the physical response to that fear. Because I think what a lot of people who don't have really bad anxiety don't realize is that you physically feel it. It's not just like, oh, I feel scared and I know I shouldn't be, so I'm just going to push it down. It's like you feel physically sick. The nerve endings are fried. Like, it actually, like, hurts all of your nerves. Your heart is beating super fast. It affects your breathing. It's like it's a physical reaction when you're really, really afraid. And I like that that's brought to life here. I also like that last line of, like, oh, yeah, I just missed a pill. I've done that. I relate to this a little too strongly.
Yeah, definitely, definitely relatable for those of us that take medicine. But, yeah, I like that you – oh, my gosh, I just blanked out. Sorry. Shoot. All right, well, excellent comment. Sorry about that. And just a great write on paranoia by Samantha Duffy. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Ruby's Retreat by Michael McDermott. The many character parts she once played made Ruby famous. With eyes closed, she shared in lover's pain with her soul-felt songs. But beyond the spotlight, waiting sober ghosts were numerous. So she lived alone in sad seclusion behind drawn velvet blinds. Dancing between familiar, precious, adopted daydreams, a memory playing hopscotch with bygone fickle youth, Ruby floats at ease in seductive twilight mind streams, which reflect her disconnection from now elusive truth. Aunt Ruby came to visit us at our home last Sunday morning in a sports car with gifts and kisses, and she played with us a lot. Now we're all standing around her in a white graveyard where it's raining, and they're crying for my auntie, who died because she got shot. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. An excellent write by Michael McDermott. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Well, that end was a bit of a twist for me, because most of our rights, it turns out the threat's not real. But here, it seems like she was right to be afraid and actually got killed. I was kind of expecting it to twist the other way. So I'm taken off guard. I liked the line, but beyond the spotlight, waiting sober ghosts were numerous. And I kind of thought of that as, like, when she wasn't out partying and, you know, drinking in her fame, sometimes literally drinking, then her ghost haunted her, when she allowed herself, like, kind of a regular life and sobered up, she was hit by her fears. But having read the ending, now I'm not sure about my interpretation of the beginning. So I don't know. I need to think about it.
I understand that, and I like that. You know, that you mentioned that this one took a different twist at the end. How we've had a lot where it turns out that it was all just the paranoia, and there was nothing there except for, like, the missed medication or, you know, whatever, the psychological illness. And the, you're right, this one, it does throw you off, which I think is a good thing in the way that all of a sudden, like, oh, she died because she got shot. So was she right, or was getting shot just a coincidence? You know, and so, yeah, it's definitely, I agree, it is a right that you have to put some thought into. And I, too, like, I do like the idea, though, of, you know, those the ghosts haunting, and the ghosts being not, you know, like, you know, spirits of people who are died, but the memories that, that haunt us. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the end line is open-ended, and it's meant to be that way, so it could be interpreted in a number of ways. But I'm going to go with an easy, well, maybe not an easy one. The many character parts she once played made Ruby famous. All right. So we understand she's got a voice. She's probably acted. She's been on the stage, something around that. And then beyond the spotlight, waiting sober ghosts were numerous. So that points to being on in years. So she lived alone in stat seclusion behind drawn velvet blinds. Now that second line is what captures me. With eyes closed, she shared in the lover's pain with her soul-felt songs. Now, I'll get to that in a minute. The second one hits on the actuality of where she is. Aged, she's walked back in time, precious daydreams, hopscotch with a fickle youth. She's at ease in that, in those twilight mind streams, because those memories hold a lot for her. The disconnection is quite there, and the elusive truth, I think, based on that second line and the elusive truth and the fact she's, Michael finishes out with Ruby coming over, standing with her sports car, plenty of gifts, kisses, and played with the kids, and then the graveyard scene where it's raining, as you go from morning into the raining, and they're crying for Auntie who died because she got shot. Now, that line, last line right there, is definitely a kid offering up that thought. But the rest of this, with eyes closed, she shared in the lover's pain with the snowfalls. I think she killed somebody. And she lived with that behind those drawn velvet blinds. That's why she kept going back to those, the fickle youth, the precious adopted daydream, and the twilight mind streams where she lived at ease in that. And the disconnect came from truth and reality. And the back end, that last stanza, is her knowing it's her time to pay for that which she has done. That's why the last line is open-ended. So this is from a kid.
Oh, I like that. I like that thought. Yeah. I even wondered if, even though it seems like it, that there was a possibility that the auntie who died and Aunt Ruby were two different people. Because, you know, it wasn't specifically stated. You know, yeah, there is that. I like that you brought up the idea, that sense of guilt that lives with somebody. I also like how you mentioned in the beginning where the idea that the many character parts she once played made Ruby famous. And so she had a voice. And maybe, you know, though I definitely like your interpretation of that guilt killing somebody, maybe is that idea that she spoke up and said things, you know, that people didn't like. But yeah, this is really just a wonderful, thought-provoking write. And I really like the imagery. And so she lived alone in sad seclusion behind drawn velvet blinds. Because I feel like in that first stanza, you go from the build-up of someone who's being very famous, very vocal, and then very social, and then becoming that secluded person behind those velvet blinds. So just an excellent write and very well done. And I'm not going to have us try to fit in another write and comment. I think we'll just do carryovers either for, well, whatever show of ours needs rights or for the next dark show. Instead, I'm going to have us talk about coming shows and contests that need rights. And Afasiana, let's start with you. What do you got going on?
All right. For Parts That Are Part Saint this week, we have Emily Dickinson. We have some quotes that are from her poems. And then I've also been kind of binge-watching the TV show that's based on her life. So I also have a couple of quotes from that show, which is kind of like a modern twist on her life, even though it's set in the past. There's little bits like they have, like, Death, who she hallucinates about. The Grim Reaper is, like, this rapper guy, and he kind of gives hints about the future. So it's a twist for sure, but I'm really enjoying it. So I have quotes from that. And then for Double Helix next week, we have Mind Games Part 2. So last time we did Mind Games You Play With Yourself, this is Mind Games That People Play With You. So it's kind of like dealing with narcissists or manipulative people.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to both those shows. And Rex, what do you got going on?
Arlo Guthrie's the Alice's Restaurant Massacre is for this Sunday. And we could use some pieces. I got three. But well, being what it is, Thanksgiving week, maybe it's not sitting
absolutely
right. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, maybe if you can get the topic board up tomorrow, even if people don't enter the contest, they could put something on the topic board. But, yeah, I highly recommend. Now, the thing with Alice's Restaurant is it's an extremely long song. So you might not want to delve into all 18 minutes of it, but, you know, listen to, or if you can listen to all 18 minutes, because it's worth it, and read the lyrics. And even if you're not inspired by the whole theme, like the whole thing, you know, just be inspired by a section or be inspired by the general vibe. You know, there's just so much, there's so much that this one song offers up. That I highly recommend that everyone check out Rex's contest, and when he gets it up, check out, you know, put something on the topic board or in the contest, because it's definitely one that we're looking for rights for. I have two contests up that I'm looking for rights, and that is for Rex's After Midnight show this Tuesday. I have an epitaphs contest, which has a variety of epitaphs from famous people, ranging from the serious to the humorous. We have Jim Morrison, Bette Davis, Dee Dee Ramone, Frank Sinatra, Mel Blanc, D.H. Lawrence, Virginia Woolf, Charles Bukowski, just a wide variety. And then for Break On Through next week on Friday After Midnight, I have poem by Leonard Cohen, Puppets, which was put to music. And it was actually something that Mr. M. Robert sent to me that he thought would make a good prompt. And I had to agree. It definitely... really looking forward to the rights that all these prompts inspire. All right. Well, thank you, Afasiana, for calling in and joining us. Thank you, Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes and for all the work she puts in the background. And this has been a great show. I've really enjoyed myself, so thank you.
Yes, all you paranoids, now you can go to bed. Ahar.
Now I have to stay up and be paranoid. All right, good night, everyone.
Good night, people.